Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderful, and I only cried a little bit at the end of this episode.
You're weathering your namesake?
Indeed, I am. Came and went without having much of an impact, except a lot of moving air and a little bit of liquid.
Like you.
Exactly. Although I probably expelled more liquid than this did on us.
Hey guys, we are brought to you by supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/thesimpsonsshow. Only $2 a month, you gain access to all of our bonus material, including bonus episodes, weekly bonus reviews. There's other stuff on there. I encourage you to check it out if you think the show's worth a buck or two. Definitely appreciate everyone who does support us. We have a person to thank this week, Matt.
You mean one of the best people in the world? All right.
I agree. I read the names as they are sent to me. The name I received was for this week was Shuffle Huffle. Thank you.
All right, then.
Thanks, Shuffle. Shuffle Huffle. Thank you very much. I don't know. Whoever you are, thank you. We appreciate your help. Again, you can also help the show by going to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. Give us a 5-star review, subscribe, like us, whatever it does, whatever. I know Stitcher has like a follow like thing. There's a Google. They all have different systems, but whatever the one that help, you know, that says, "Hey, this show's good." We appreciate that. Also, I will be participating in the Extra Life Gaming Charity Marathon this year. Anyone who donates $25 or more to the cause has a chance to guest on a future episode of their choice. Simply go to extra-life.org/team/The Simpsons Show to donate or join the team. I will have links in the show notes as well and on social media until the event. On to this week's episode. It is Mother Simpson, episode 3F06, originally aired November 19th, 1995, written by Richard Apple, directed by David Silverman. Finished 45th in the ratings, Nielsen rating of 10.0, approximately 9.6 million viewing households, fourth highest rated show on Fox that week following Beverly Hills 90210, The X-Files, and Melrose Place.
Yep, that's just the way it is.
And one of those is name dropped in this episode.
Indeed it is. You might even hear that name drop.
What? Oh, foreshadowing. The couch gag. The family is set on the couch like bowling pins with a little pin setter. It's fine. No chalkboard gag. The episode guest stars, famously, Glenn Close as Mona Simpson and Harry Morgan as Bill Gannon, who Harry Morgan originally played Bill Gannon. They are not even trying.
He's been pretty old then.
I'm not sure how old he was. His voice sounded exactly the same as it did from
Dragnet?
Dragnet. Yeah, he sounds exactly like he sounded in Dragnet. He was 96 in 2011 when he died.
Wow.
He died.
Is he still alive?
No, he died at 96.
Oh.
He was born in 1915, so he was 80 years old when this episode came out.
Got to do what that guy's doing, whatever it is.
he had quite a long life. He performs admirably in this episode as well.
Yeah.
Episode begins with Burns making plant workers clean up garbage on the side of the road. He stands around long enough to get a photo op in of him cleaning up garbage, and then he leaves, leaving his plant workers to do all the work. They are cleaning up. Lenny is. I did notice Lenny put a full bird's nest in one of those trash bags.
He did. They're just taking anything that's laying on the ground and toss them in trash bags.
You should probably put with eggs. That's not a good thing. Homer is absent and you don't know where he is until we see him up on top of the waterfall, basically. And then a long sequence, which is mostly visual gags and mostly sound effects, so I did not pull it, but him falling off the waterfall, getting hit on rocks and breaking his arms and legs, getting his clothes ripped off by beavers, and then him getting pulled into a turbine and dying.
Horrifically.
Horrifically, where both Smithers and Burns mourn him very briefly and then are back to business. But we find out that Homer has faked his own death to avoid work.
Well, yeah. I mean, work sucks. Of course you're going to try and fake your death.
Oh, how about
what better way to get out of that can you think of, Robbie?
Just call it sick. $600 of the dummy. $600 is a lot of money.
Indeed it is, especially to get one Saturday off of work.
Wouldn't that just be a volunteer situation? Couldn't you just beg off?
Well, it's one of those things where the company's like, you're going to volunteer or else. It's probably one of those situations.
I don't think Homer is like in a position where it matters if the company likes him.
That's probably true.
I don't think he's like on a good list somewhere. But so Homer is recorded as dead because everyone saw him get killed. And the town begins to mourn their own way.
And blame the beavers for their failed rescue.
Yeah, why? Those damn beavers. See what I did there? Pun definitely intended. Marge gets visitors from the church when Flanders, perhaps some inappropriate diddly doodlies in there, even though he does apologize, which I appreciate. But then eventually, her own sisters come by with a tombstone for Homer, which weighs in later on in the episode. It's a plot point.
And which they've been saving for since their wedding day.
Yeah, which is monstrous. I don't know, like, that's...
It's a very Patty and Selma thing.
It is a very Patty and Selma thing. But eventually, Marge, I guess, it just assumes... I don't know what she assumes at this point. Like, she's getting visited by all these people who think Homer's dead. But at that point, the power gets turned off. And she has to confront him about it.
Homer!
That's my name.
When I asked you if that dummy was to fake your own death, you told me no. You go downtown first thing in the morning and straighten this out.
Mom! Dad! Bart ran into a doorframe and bit his tongue.
What the hell is going on here?
I really don't get the Bart joke there. It's funny, but...
I think it's just supposed to be, like, a very dumb thing. Like, because visually, all you see is darkness with their eyes.
Yeah.
And they're all running around. I think it's just, like, a very much, like, very low physical humor thing. It's just like, yeah, Bart bit his tongue.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know. It's simple, sometimes better. Homer goes down to the Springfield Hall of Records to tell them he's not dead. So that the power... They don't really turn your power off if you die, do they? Right away?
Well, I believe it was because the power was in Homer's name. And if that person is registered as deceased, I mean, I don't think they would be that quick to turn it off. They may eventually notice when someone notifies them, like, hey, turn off this power. Here's a death certificate. But I don't think they would automatically turn it off.
That's what I was curious about. But Homer actually faces no red tape when talking to the bureaucratic overlords.
You guys think I'm dead, but I'm not. No, I want you to straighten this out without a lot of your bureaucratic red tape and mumbo-jumbo.
Okay, Mr. Simpson, I'll just make the change here. And you're all set.
I don't like your attitude, you water cooler dictator. What do you have in that secret government file anyway? I have a right to read it.
You sure do.
Wife, Marjorie, children, Bartholomew, Lisa. Aha! Uh-huh! See? This thing is all screwed up. Who the heck is Margaret Simpson?
Your youngest daughter.
Your youngest daughter. Well, how about this? This thing says my mother's still alive. She died when I was a kid. You see that stone angel up there? That's my mother's grave. My dad points it out every time we drive by.
Mr. Simpson, maybe you should actually go up there.
Okay, so Homer goes up to visit what he thinks is his mother's grave.
Oh, Mom, I'm sorry I never come to see you. I'm just not a cemetery person. Here lies... Walt Whitman! Ah! Damn you, Walt Whitman! I hate you, Walt freaking Whitman! Leaves of grass, my ass!
That's the best clip in this entire episode. And of course, while watching this episode, I had to basically speak along with Homer. It's like karaoke, but for The Simpsons. It's the best.
What do you have against Walt Whitman? What's wrong with Walt Whitman?
Have you ever read Walt Whitman?
Matt? Yes.
I know, English major, but sometimes you're like, no, I haven't read that.
No, I've read Walt Whitman. It was...
For one, I'm not a giant fan of poetry. And for two, generally, all those transcendentalists and people who are big on nature, their poetry is absolutely insufferable. I put Thoreau in the same category. I can't stand reading them. They're so self-important, it makes my brain leak out my ears.
I like Walt Whitman. I like the transcendentalists. They're going for something. They had a perspective. But Homer, I don't know, his world's kind of broken at this point. What he thinks is his mother's grave is Walt Whitman's grave.
Which, that could give us a clue to where Springfield is.
Nah, it does not. Because Walt Whitman, I think, is buried in New Jersey. Yeah, Camden, New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
And he doesn't know what to do. I mean, a thing that he thought an established fact of his life is wrong. Like, completely wrong. Does he fall?
It shook the bedrock of his existence.
It sort of does, yeah. And he sees his own grave, which is also not necessarily a reassuring thing when you're emotionally shaken. Seeing your own grave is not necessarily going to help you. He falls in. We see a woman approach from behind. We don't see her face at first. And she is upset that Homer is in her, what she says is her son's grave. And then Homer, he states, no, this is mine. And then they both realize that she is his mother. That is, we meet Mona Simpson for the first time. And then,
dun, dun, dun.
And then we go to commercial. Very short first act.
Indeed, very, very short. But when we get back, we are still in the cemetery with Mona and Homer, and it's one of those overwhelming kind of things. It's like, I thought you were dead. I thought you were dead, kind of thing, which is, you know, they basically go back and forth about that. And Mona is, of course, overjoyed that Homer is still alive, and Homer is absolutely flabbergasted that Mona is still alive. But luckily, Homer is able to ruin the moment when a pelican flies by and drops a fish in his pants.
It lands on his head.
Oh, his head. Sorry.
Yeah. And then drops a fish in his pants.
Oh, the pelican lands on his head. And then
yeah,
drops
yeah,
a fish in his pants.
Yeah. Okay. It reminds me actually of because a lot of this episode is about kind of seeing where what Mona's legacy is and how the Simpsons actually, like, for all the Simpsons we see, we don't really see much outside of the core family aside from Grandpa and very occasionally Patty and Selma. Sometimes, you know, Marge's mother.
Herb.
Yeah, or Herb for two episodes. Marge's mother occasionally. But we don't really see, you know, their legacy very much. And this episode does a good job of establishing, like, hey, Lisa makes sense. Because
when you really look at it, she kind of does.
Lisa makes sense. And Homer also, this particular moment also, it reminds me of Raging Abe Simpson and the Grumbling Grandson, et cetera, because mm-hmm. Abe can't go more than like 5 seconds without embarrassing himself. Like they're having this serious moment in the graveyard, which also another graveyard scene where his pants just fall off. Like it's the same thing.
That's
it's
how
like,
Simpsons deal with sadness and, yeah. and death is zany wackiness.
Yeah. It's like they can't help themselves. It's just, it's in the DNA.
Indeed. Homer takes Mona home to meet the family, and everyone is basically shocked and flabbergasted, and everyone is talking over themselves. Marge is coming to the realization that she finally has a mother-in-law and no longer has to live vicariously through her girlfriends, which is usually probably not a good thing for Marge. But hey, when Lisa finally gets up to speak, she notes a very interesting similarity.
This is so weird. It's like something out of Dickens or Melrose Place.
So, at this point, I think Fox is trying to weave together its shows a little more. Right, Robbie?
A little more.
Just a little bit. At this point, Bart steps in to point out that since Mona was a no-show at all of the important events of his life, with back presents and taxes and fees, which I don't know how many taxes get involved there, or maybe it's interest and penalties, either way, that she owes him $22,000, which I'd really like to see the math on that, because that's a lot for a little kid. He must be really exaggerating the amount that she would spend on him for every holiday.
He says $75 per.
Oh, did he say that? Wow.
Yes, he says 75.
That was a lot of money in the mid-90s.
I know, I don't. And from a grandmother. I don't know. My grandmother never wasn't routinely giving me $75 gifts.
Heck no. Grandparents are less than 50 bucks.
My grandma, always. I think, was 20 to 50 as I got older and money became less worth. As it got, as inflation made it less.
But, of course, Homer takes great offense to this and begins to strangle Bart, to which Mona steps in to stop him but doesn't know Bart's name. So it's a little bit awkward. After this, we get to see Mona and Lisa. They begin to bond, and we start to see that Lisa does kind of make sense in the Simpson family.
I saw all your awards, Lisa. They're mighty impressive.
Oh, I just keep them out to bug Bart.
Don't be bashful. When I was your age, kids made fun of me because I read at the 9th grade level.
Me too.
Hey, Mom! Look at me!
Look at what I can do!
I see you, Homer. That's very nice. Although I hardly consider a separate piece the ninth grade level.
Yeah, more like preschool.
I hate John Knowles.
Me too.
Mom! You're not looking!
You know, Lisa, I feel like I have an instant rapport with you.
Oh, you didn't dumb it down. You said rapport.
Gotta run. Grandma stuff.
So, of course, it's wonderful that Lisa and Mona have a rapport and dumb it down. And they don't dumb it down for each other. Also, a separate piece. I'm also on board with the John Knowles hate. And I love Homer in the background doing a handstand, which is really impressive for Homer, because I sure as heck can't do a handstand.
Yeah,
and not getting any attention.
Homer at 240 pounds doing handstands is pretty good. Also, yeah, John Knowles is the pits. Separate piece is not. That is a slog.
Yeah.
No, it's
a short slog, but a slog nonetheless.
It's a slog regardless. I think having a, and one, this also, this even establishes like Lisa the Simpson later on, and like, you know, successful Simpson women exist and all that. But it's just charming and sweet to see Lisa have someone in her family that she can communicate with at an intelligent level, and not have to, you know, she doesn't have to lower herself to like to communicate with her grandmother.
That's true, because even with Marge, I feel like she has to lower her intellectual discourse level on frequent occasions. But if Mona had stuck around, that would not have to have been the case. And, well, we'll see how that turns out at the end of the episode.
Yeah, oh, it's a big surprise. No one knows.
Yeah, we can't have Lisa being happy. Of course not. That would make the show too boring. Well, at the end of that clip, you hear Mona run inside, and what has spooked her is a police car, which Lisa finds suspicious, rightfully. She then goes to Bart, who apparently has been rummaging around in her purse, and finds a whole bunch of fake IDs. Mona Simpson, Mona Stevens, Muddy Mae Suggins.
Penelope Olson.
Yes, Penelope Olson. I feel like Muddy Mae Suggins was her Alabama name or Mississippi name, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so. She was traveling around as a jug player in a blues band. She was,
of course,
she was Muddy Mae.
Good old Muddy Mae.
Yep.
Yeah. And of course, the rest of the family has noticed some weird things as well, so they confront her about this. And at this point, we get a very extended flashback to the 60s. We see baby Homer playing Operation and being really bad at it, to the point where he actually gets like stuck and can't get out with the little 9-volt battery in the Operation game.
It's really yeah. Everything about like these designs of the I think we saw little Homer in Grandpa vs. Sexual Inadequacy.
Yes, just for a little bit when he wants to be president and he sees Kennedy.
Right, but I don't know. It's always their designs for these characters in the past and these flashbacks is always really great.
Yeah, and they fit. I mean, it's very obvious this is Homer because, as we'll see next, Mona comes to save him, and she loves him very much despite his subnormal intelligence, and sings him his bedtime song.
Sing me my bedtime song, Mom.
Ooey gooey, rich and chewy inside. Golden flaky tender cakey outside. Wrap the inside in the outside. Is it good? Doing a big fig. Newton. Okay. Here's the tricky part.
That's the best. It's like, tricky part, time for Homer to sleep.
That's the, I don't know. Seeing how he was raised,
yeah,
you can kind of understand Homer's obsession with food and brands. He's a good consumer. And, you know,
well, Homer is a baby boomer, which has been pointed out many, many times. I feel like baby boomers were the first kids to have a lot of television. So they were the first kids to get extensive inculcation with brands. So that makes sense. But here you can kind of see that even in away from the television, Homer kind of got inundated into himself.
Inculcation, Matt. Wow, that's a good word. I like that word. That's a good word.
I hope I'm using it correctly. I'm pretty sure I am.
I'd say you are. It jives with my understanding of what that word means.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. Merriam-Webster says I'm using it right.
Okay.
Aw, yeah.
He also, he has the Fig Newton song as a lullaby. He also, you see him tucked away. He has a, later, this is a little bit later, but he has a Pillsbury Doughboy as like a doll.
Oh,
that's
his
little stuffed animal is a Pillsbury Doughboy. So Fig Newton's Pillsbury Doughboy. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, make me hungry.
It's just kind of fantastic. So at this point, we get Mona goes back to talk to Abe, and Abe is how would you describe Abe here? Because I feel like I can't come up with any nice way of saying this.
Oh, well, I don't think you have to be nice. Abe seems like kind of a jerk. I don't know. It's not like you're not getting a wide swath of Abe here. You know, he's watching the Super Bowl and Mona is talking to him and he seems like a jerk. I don't know. He's
not paying attention to her. He's wearing, you know, slobby clothes in a recliner. You know, he's got a beer in his hand and watching the Super Bowl because if people don't watch it, it might not make it.
Well, I mean, back in the day, it wasn't as a big a thing as it is today, especially then. It's Super Bowl III, Super Bowl III was not called the Super Bowl. It wasn't the Super Bowl until Super Bowl IV.
Oh, that's right. It was the AFL-NFL championship
It was just a championship game. And it wasn't as popular because the Packers had dominated the first two championship games. And maybe, like, you know, a lot of people thought, oh, well, the NFL is always going to be, you know, AFL is like the startup football. They're not going to be ever going to be successful. This championship game is a farce. NFL is always going to win. But with Joe Namath, he was a very famous figure because the Jets were huge underdogs and he promised victory and they ended up winning. And it kind of did ignite, like, there's a reason that the next one was called the Super Bowl because, hey, the AFL won one. They, you know, it was a little bit, you know, maybe not as assuredly as popular as it seems it would be today.
Wikipedia disagrees with you. It says that Super Bowl III was the first to officially bear the name Super Bowl. So this would have been that game.
Okay, well then, Matt, we can't rely on the news groups because that's where I got that information.
Oh, snap. Apparently it was the Orange Bowl in Miami, Florida. Joe Namath's hair is apparently what drives Mona to her wild, rebellious ways because unlike Abe's preferred football player haircut, well, of Johnny Unitas, who had a haircut you can set your watch to, which I guess refers to, I honestly don't even know. I don't know what he's referring to there.
What? What do you mean, a hair you could set your watch to?
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
Johnny Unitas has basically a crew cut, you know, close shave to the head, military style. I think it just means, you know, it's reliable, it's consistent, it's a manly man's haircut, you know.
Wasn't sure if there was a specific origin to that.
No, this is the origin, Matt. The Simpsons.
Oh, of course.
The Simpsons, the show?
Yes. Who is Cream, by the way? Is that who played the song that plays?
Oh, Matt.
What, Robbie? Music is unimportant in life.
I'm dead. You killed me.
I think I broke Robbie.
Cream. Air Band. Eric Clapton was in him.
Okay.
You know Eric Clapton? One of the best guitarists ever to live.
I've never heard of the band Cream.
Never heard of the band Cream.
Nope.
Matt, I guarantee...
It's a good name for a band. I'm sure I've heard their songs, but I've never heard them called Cream. Sorry. Hey, my parents forced me to listen to country music, not classic rock. So, you know, I can name way too many country artists and not nearly enough classic rock. I'm sorry.
Well, you have time. Listen to Cream.
I have better things to do with my time. I listen to podcasts.
Cream's also good. Cream is a good band.
If this is one of their songs, then yes, you are correct. Yeah, they do sound like a pretty good
band. Yeah, they play Sunshine of My Love over this music. And it's very much her awakening from... You look at a lot of movies from this time period that are about this kind of hippie awakening. They all have this moment. And the Simpsons are kind of making fun of that by having it like be, hey, look at sideburns. Joe Namath's hair with sideburns.
Oh, my goodness.
It awakens Mona's kind of individualist, the freedom, the rebellious nature just comes alive. And you hear Cream screenplays, but you know, it could just as well be the Byrds or any of those bands from that era that were typified like by hippies.
That's true. Protest rock songs, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, Mona then goes to find people who agree with her views, which she actually finds at the State College, where she goes and gets involved in a protest.
Anthrax, Cambridge, swimmers here! Get your germ lab out of here! Now!
How could I not become a radical when we were fighting a force of pure evil?
Hey, hey, Mr. Burns, get up already with the germs!
To their flower power, it's no match for my glower power.
Well, that's some nice glowering, Mr. Burns.
Yes, it was quite an impressive glower that Mr. Burns uses to silence dissent.
It was a glower. And Wiggum's voice with young Wiggum if that is just Hank Azaria just like doing his own thing. Like that's really,
that is amazing. It's he's
really
able to do that.
It's really impressive. Yeah,
it's so noticeable. It's like that's very obviously Wiggum with like a weird. Stuffiness to it.
Yeah, the weird nasalness that it's not even. Like, that's the thing that sets it apart is, like, it's not, like, an even nasal. It's, like, a very, like, warbling, weird noise that you could definitely buy. Like, oh, no, poor Wiggum as a young person had some breathing problems.
Yeah, some horrible sickness. At this point, of course, they have met the enemy, and the enemy was Mr. Burns. So Mona goes home. And basically she puts Homer to bed and tells Abe that she's going off to meet her destiny, at which point they basically set a bomb in Mr. Burns' germ warfare lab. And you don't see it until it actually goes off with the Spiro Agnew clock, but it is an antibiotic bomb. And they release an antibiotic gas, which is, you know, not a thing, to destroy all of the viruses and a few bacteria that are in the lab.
Matt, no, look, all this science, this is all real science.
Uh-huh. Smallpox is definitely cured by antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. Matt, this is, look, the Simpsons wouldn't lie to us with it.
I believe they would.
No.
Actually, the one thing that probably would have cured all this is fire. Heat would have killed everything in that lab. So if they had just used a firebomb like regular protesters, this would have been scientifically accurate.
Matt, I'm just saying that this science is real, and I've based my entire life about this.
Uh-huh. So for our listeners who are more scientifically minded, I believe it's smallpox, which is a virus and would not be stopped by this, diphtheria. I want to say it's tuberculosis and pneumonia, which are also bacteria and could have been cured by an antibiotic injection or something like that. And then influenza, which tries to run away and then dies, but in real life would not, because influenza is also a virus. That's why you can't cure. That's why you should never, ever take antibiotics to cure the flu. You are wasting antibiotics and making other bacteria more resistant. That makes you a bad person. But
what Matt is saying is that The Simpsons is entirely scientifically accurate, and everything you saw in this episode is actually possible and would happen.
Yes, including the fact that as Wiggum, being the night watchman, runs away from the crazy cloud of antibiotics, his asthma is cured by it, because asthma is not a long-term inflammatory disease of the lungs.
Matt, this scientifically accurate.
Actually, the really funny thing is that acne is sometimes caused by bacteria, so that probably would have been cured by an antibiotic bomb. But for Wiggum, it's actually the opposite. His asthma is cleared up, but his acne remains.
Oh, no! Wait a minute. Bronchial tubes clearing. Asthma disappearing. Acne remains, but asthma disappearing.
So yes, poor Wiggum is cured of his asthma in an entirely scientific way.
Entirely scientifically accurate, yeah.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. But at this point, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you have asthma, just dose yourself with a cloud of antibiotics. You'll be fine.
That's true. Don't use your steroids, which actually do help asthma. Don't use antibiotics.
No, Matt, The Simpsons would not lie to us.
Of course. But at this point, Mr. Burns hears the alarm and runs up, but he is trampled by all of the hippies running away. Mona, of course, being a more mature adult, stops to help him up, which proves to be her undoing, as Mr. Burns sees her face and says that she'll go to jail for a long, long time. Mona, at this point, leaves him now that she made sure that he was okay, and because Wiggum slammed the door in his face to announce that he could breathe, and makes I for some reason I did not capture the clip of Wiggum breathing without his asthma, but it's amazing, and you guys shall go find it. But Mona goes home. She says goodbye to Homer while he sleeps, gives him a kiss goodbye, and then tells Abe she has to leave him forever. To which Abe barely even responds. And we go back to the present at this point. Homer believes he dreamed that kiss, which he now knows was real. And they all accept that as a plausible explanation for what actually happened. And of course, Homer at this point is upset that Mona never tried to contact him, but she claims to have sent him a care package every week. So they go to the post office to figure out who's right. Turns out it was Mona, and Homer never got it because he didn't tip his letter carrier at Christmas. So I guess everyone, that's a good reminder, tip your letter carriers at Christmas time. Because Homer gets a giant pile of boxes that should have been from Mona. But while they're at the post office, so is Mr. Burns. In a rare case of him doing something for himself, he is attempting to send a letter to the Prussian consulate in Siam by autogyro. Yep, well, those are words.
Well, you want to get it there fast.
Autogyros are in general, I guess they were fast in like the early 20th century, back when there was there hasn't been a Prussia since like the 1860s, 1870s, and Siam became Vietnam in the, when did they change that name? It's probably the first half of the 20th century. So yeah, all of that would have been possible. Actually, no, because there was no Prussia by the time there was an autogyro. So none of those words, once again, make sense. But, you know,
Matt,
it's Mr. Burns. So, haha, funny.
Matt.
What?
100% scientifically accurate.
Yes, yes. Of course, due to the fact that all the things I've just explained, the poor squeaky voice teen working at the post office is confused beyond measure. But Mr. Burns sees Mona, despite the fact that she's in a bandana and sunglasses, and recognizes her face.
And is 25 years older.
And is 25 years older. So Mr. Burns recognizes her and then tries to chase her out of the building, but fails and cannot figure out where to go. And that's how we actually end the act and go to commercial.
I think Mona probably should have just, like, what crime would she have committed? Like trespassing?
I'm pretty sure even an antibiotic bomb would count as some sort of terrorism back then.
Well, I mean, but but they don't have the evidence that she made it. Like, you know, all that they have is that she was there helping Mr. Burns. Like, I don't, you know, you could.
That's true. I mean, there's no physical evidence that puts her there in the germ lab except Mr. Burns' identification. And as we all know, eyewitness identification is notoriously poor. Without physical evidence,
we all know
no
that.
Germ would ever convict her.
We all know that.
Indeed,
we all do.
Your brain will lie to you. Don't trust it.
I think we're getting to what Matt is. I think we're getting closer to the inside of Matt, to the core.
Uh-huh.
The act begins with Joe Friday and Bill Gannon, the Dragnet dudes, helping Mr. Burns try and track down Mona. Because of course, those are the people you mm-hmm. call when you have a need.
They're the best detectives ever. I mean, they could have called Columbo or Quincy, I guess, but you know.
I don't know. The Simpsons do have history with Dragnet. They've had the...
That's true.
They really like Dragnet, so it makes sense they would bring him back. But we see... Well, they're kind of trying to hunt down Mona and figure out where she is now. We see Lisa and Mona bond some more, and they're jamming out on a saxophone and guitar.
With some protest songs.
How many roads must a man walk down before you can call him a man?
7.
No, Dad, it's a rhetorical question.
Rhetorically? 8.
Dad, do you even know what rhetorical means?
Do I know what rhetorical means?
No, the answer is no. He doesn't know what rhetorical
no,
means.
He really doesn't.
He doesn't. They get a knock on the door, and we think it's the cops at first, but then we just find out that it's Abe. And Abe and Mona have a bittersweet reunion.
Abe?
What the hashtip?
Now here's a piece of bad news.
Oh, Abe, you've aged terribly.
What do you expect? You left me to raise the boy on my own!
I had to leave, but you didn't have to tell Homer I was dead!
It was either that or tell him his mother was a wanted criminal! You were a rotten wife, and I'll never, ever forgive you! Can we have sex, please?
Oh, Abe.
Well, I tried. What's for supper?
Oh, Abe.
Oh, Abe. You've aged terribly.
That's true. Okay, my question is, we never really see whether they're divorced or not, because I don't think Mona would have had time. So technically, they're still married, correct?
I think so. Although, yeah, I guess.
I'm just wondering, because in a later episode, Abe gets married to another woman, so...
Is that after Mona has, quote-unquote, died?
You know, I believe it is. It may even be in the same season. Let me see. I'm not as good with the newer episodes.
Nah, it's fine. I don't actually care.
Okay, I'll halfway pay attention to you.
Okay. I do like Abe just going like, hey, kid, can we do it, please? I'm old. we are still married, right? Yeah, but Mona has aged much better than Abe. Abe doesn't. Abe does look. When you look at them together and you go, oh, well, Mona looks just like a nice old lady. Abe looks like a melting candle. Not looking, not so great. But they have a dinner together. At the same time, the Dragnet boys are trying to track down leads on Mona. It's like a couple like Law and Order interstitial scenes in here where they like interview a dude next to a truck and he's like, oh yeah, I saw her. And, like, they show it, they do the gag about, yeah, she would look 27 years older or whatever, and he's like, oh yeah, yeah. And then they get her back to the cemetery where she's spotted, and you know, spotted at Homer's grave, and then they track down. That's the thing. Like, how do they know? Oh, yeah, he saw the dude at the gravedigger saw Patty and Selma.
Right.
And one was real pretty and the other one was real plain.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
Patty and Selma. One is real pretty. One is real plain. And they track them down, and then they figure out, oh, it's Homer's tombstone. And Wiggum puts out an APB.
Look, we know you bought the tombstone. We know the fugitive visited that tombstone. Whose tombstone was it?
Just lift up your coffee cups and see.
Good Lord.
Put out an APB on a Eustwis R. Dewo. Better start with Greek Town.
That's Homer J. Simpson, Chief. You're reading it upside down.
Cancel that APB.
They know that it's Homer. They know that Mona is with him. We get Burns in like a was it a Walter Mondale style? That's what they're going for, right? With the tank helmet on and him poking his little head out. You know what I'm talking about?
I think it's supposed to be like a Patton kind of thing.
No, well, that I don't know. It reminded me of Walter Mondale when he made a fool of himself in the election, the 88 election, because he was.
You thinking of Dukakis?
Dukakis, not Mondale. You're right, Dukakis.
Okay, I was going to say it's like with Mondale.
No, Dukakis. You're right. No, yeah.
Okay,
I was thinking he was going for that thing. Because he does look just as ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But
by the way, I did find it. Yes, Mona dies in season, or dies in quotation marks, in season 19. And Abe, he got married back before or after Mona left, but before Mona died to Rita LaFleur in season 24 in Gone, A.B. Gone.
Right. Okay. We have seen in the more recent season, like when I think about not this season, but last season, we did see the ghost of Mona. So I guess she's actually dead. I'm still buying into the fact that she'll come back to life somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know. It depends how long the episode. If The Simpsons lasts till season 40, I think we're going to see her frinkle.
Oh, yeah. Well, they'll come back around again.
Yeah. But Burns attacks with, he's in like the SWAT style battering ram vehicle. He starts playing Ride of the Valkyries. It quickly segues into ABBA because Smithers taped over Ride of the Valkyries.
So they show up with a tank and Smithers has a rifle. It's like, you guys are really going out of your way for a little old lady, aren't you?
I know. Well, Burns, to be fair, Burns does hold a grudge. He does. He's not a type to forgive and forget. He may forget. He will not forgive.
Yeah.
Like, how often does Burns forgive people?
Never.
I can't think of a situation where he's literally like, he's either exacted revenge or he's realized that his revenge is not possible, and therefore he can't do it. Like, that's, I think, the two situations. But Homer was tipped off, and him and Mona make a run for it. They're by the time Mer Burns has attacked the house, broken down the door, Mona and Homer are gone. And we cut to them out in the, I guess, the Springfield Badlands is what it is, right?
It looks like that, or it's, was it West Springfield? Basically all the places that have showed up in The Simpsons where there's like nothing but scrub.
Yeah. The desert outside of Springfield that we've seen many.
The giant desert that's like four times the size of Texas.
We've seen many times. They're at like a little gas station, and Mona is waiting for her ride. Back to leave the Simpsons once again, and Homer and Mona say goodbye again.
At least this time I'm awake for your goodbye.
Oh, Homer. Remember, whatever happens, you have a mother, and she's truly proud of you.
Oh, hurry up, man. This electric van only has 20 minutes of juice left. Don't forget me.
Don't worry, Homer. You'll always be a part of me.
I was going to say, I was going to take this point to mention that Glenn Close destroys it in this episode. She is amazing as Mona.
Well, she's one of the best actresses of all time. So I imagine, like when you have a, like, you know, they take their role seriously. You know, like Glenn Close, like the Glenn Closes of the world do. You know, she doesn't, even in small parts, she always commits. And I think, you know, that those are the best guest performances. And, you know, when the actors take the role seriously and not go like, oh, I'm just going to be on The Simpsons and let's have some fun. It's very much like, no, I'm committing to this. And if you're going to have the role of Homer's mother, who obviously is relatively important for in the show, in the context of the actual, like the entirety of the show, having one of the best actresses that's ever lived do the roles, probably it was a good call. Apparently it was James L. Brooks who got her on board.
Wow. Good job, Mr. Brooks.
Yeah. Well, he's a very well-known guy. Also that Doe is not Glenn Close.
Oh, it isn't?
No.
Is it just like a Dan Castellaneta sounding?
No, it was Pamela Hayden.
Ah,
and she did the temporary track, I guess, and they just used that because Glenn Close could not say Doe the way they wanted. Which,
well, I wonder why.
It's a very unique thing. But Mona drives off, and we get the very, very well-known ending with Homer just sitting on the trunk of his car, just kind of staring at the stars as credits roll. That's it. Music. There's, you know, backing tracks, but
yeah, kind of just an instrumental to go out of the episode. And if you sit there and watch it.
Yeah. It's just rough. Yeah, it's sad.
It's happy, but also sad.
Yeah.
You know, Homer has a mother. She loves him very much, but she can't be with him. So it's one of those things like you're happy about, but it's also a reason to be sad.
Yeah. And it's a very nice touch. Like it takes advantage of the full runtime. Like, normally, that moment could be cut short just because, A, the episode's over, credits roll, you know, normal Simpsons theme plays. But because you get Homer just sitting there as the instrumental plays behind him and the credits roll over him, you get an extra, what, minute, maybe?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you couldn't really do unless it was exceedingly simple. And luckily, this is simple. But because of the music they use and the great animation, it adds a lot to the episode.
And like a minute in a runtime of a Simpsons episode is a long time. Like you can do a lot in 1 minute. And so when you spend in an entire minute of it's just Homer, just like just sitting there, just like kind of thinking, like just pondering, just staring at the stars, it is very impactful.
Especially like you said, in a show like this where a minute is a very long time, and normally in The Simpsons, a minute will be filled with, what, 7 or 8 jokes or, you know, a very long conversation between two characters. But to have a whole minute where it's just one character being silent is unheard of.
No, yeah.
I don't know if there's another episode they would do that.
No, and it sells Homer's kind of melancholy and sorrow, you know, losing his mother again. Well, that's how the episode ends. It's a very good episode.
It's an extremely good episode.
Certainly up there with the best endings.
Definitely. I mean, okay, I was going to save this for our, master episode list or our ranking, but I feel like this episode is one of the ones that exemplifies what we've complained a lot about with the more recent seasons, where they took one concept and were able to flesh it out to the point where 22 to 24 minutes goes by, probably 24 in the case of this episode, with one story. That's the only thing that's going on. All of the jokes they fit in, they're organic to the story, and it's so incredibly tight. And even back in the classic seasons, that wasn't something that happened in every episode, but it's something that seems to be happening less and less in the newer seasons. And this is one of those episodes that I feel like they should go back and watch and do any background research on and just figure out how they did that, essentially.
I don't think that's realistic, Matthew.
I know it's not, but...
It's fine. We will rank this episode at the end of the show. See how it goes. Who knows?
It's getting awfully crowded at the top.
We'll see. Surprisingly, no submissions for my favorite episode. I was expecting a couple, but I think I looked everywhere, so didn't get any. But if you do have a certain episode that is your favorite, please submit it to simpsonshowpod@gmail.com, and I'll read it when we get to that particular episode. Next up is comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group. As we're out, comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group and see what people were talking about the week or two after an episode debuted, what they thought of the episode, if there's any other relevant things. Again, news group is still kind of wiped at this point. I think we got a couple more episodes and then maybe it'll be back. I'm still going to Simpsons Archive for they collected a lot of the stuff that was on the news group at the time, like a capsule. That is where I got the Super Bowl information, so I blame that. It's not my fault.
Though they didn't have Wikipedia back then. They just did had not, their old failing memories.
That's true. They did not have Wikipedia. All the reviews, super positive, as you'd expect, except for one heartless monster who gave it a C.
One heartless monster.
I don't. Yes, I mean, literally,
if you're out there listening and you are the one who gave it a C, you are a heartless monster.
I mean, they generally collect like 15 to 20 reviews on most of these old episodes, and you know, you'll see A, B, C, B, B, C, C, B, A, all these, like, but this is just A plus, A, 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 A plus, A, B, A minus, B plus, A plus, A, 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 and then ones that are like C minus. Like, I think their complaint was, I get it, Lisa gets her smarts for Mona. I'm like, well, it's not like they spend that much time on it.
Yeah, that was a very small subset of the episode.
You get two scenes, like literally two scenes where Lisa is bonding. Like, is that maybe three? If you want to stretch it, like I don't. It's
yeah,
not...
if you want to stretch it. Yeah. I feel like that person has a really poor relationship with their mother and was pissed off about it.
But it's all positive, as you'd expect. This is a I feel like The Simpsons always when they I don't know when like you mentioned they do the emotional core episode, all A plot. It always seems to it connects to most audiences. I feel like that is a thing that is always more reliable than everything else. Like, over the years, their topical humor, you could say, is not always so topical. And, you know, their quote-unquote edge is not there. But even on current modern episodes, whenever they, you know, if they just focus on, like, a very core relationship, it always gives the episode something. You know, it's always a reason to watch it, and so I understand why, like, this brings all those people who are upset back into the fold or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But again, nothing else. Miss those news group trolls in my life.
Well, I'm sure they're still out there. We probably have new news group trolls now. They're just, you know, focused on other things.
No, they're on Twitter. That's where all the trolls
are. That's true.
I mean, I'm talking about, like, in general. Come on. There's certainly Twitter. Oh, Twitter. We can move on to our next segment. It is time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL's gonna give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
The listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite episode after season 10? There was a list on Paste, was it not, Matt, that had the top...
Paste Magazine.
Yeah, yep. Paste Magazine. Top 100 episodes after season... Was it season 10 or was it season 9?
I believe theirs is after season 9.
Yeah. Okay, well, I prefer after season 10. And I was interested because, you know, if you ask most people's favorite episodes, generally it's in the classic years. And there's some people who like... And there are also, you know, there are great, very good or two great episodes after that. But most people, they think fondly of those early seasons. And the response was really great. I really appreciate everyone's answers. I tried to include as many as I could, but there's just so many. But I do read all of them. I appreciate your responses. First from Daniel, Missionary Impossible. Aside from the cop-out ending, the non-ending work for The Simpsons sometimes, but not here. It's one of the most quotable episodes in the entire series. It gave us the now immortal Save Me Jeebus and Homer responding to Bart asking if he's licking toads with, I'm not licking toads. Gets me every time. From Tom, I absolutely loved how the test was won from season 20, episode 11. Feel like this episode was really grounded and was hilarious from front to back. Mr. Burns yelling Apaches after getting hit by the knife that flew out the window still cracks me up to this day. My friends and I still yell Apaches when someone is hit by a blade when playing video games. Keep up the great work, guys. Adam, Halloween of Horror, maybe the most heartfelt and funny episode in years. It is a very good episode. Stephanie, I think it's already been said, but I absolutely love Halloween of Horror. Shows Homer being a good and involved dad and Lisa being an actual kid, and I can't get over Dominatrix Sarah Wiggum. Mike's answer, E Pluribus Wiggum. Love how they move up the presidential primary to make Springfield the first one in the country, only to have all the candidates so much, hate all the candidates so much they pick the most pathetic candidate possible, Ralph Wiggum. Bill Clinton putting up posters for Hillary in Springfield is a great joke, too. Sean, picking Gone, Maggie Gone from season 20. Has a great plot of Homer losing Maggie to nuns, which turns from a heist to get her back to a mystery. Also has a great gag of Homer having to pretend his arm is Maggie to a blinded Marge and calm his hand down from eating baby food. You back off, I'm hungry. Also, shockingly, his arm is fatter than Maggie. Brendan's answer.
Shockingly, really shocking.
Well... Brendan's answer, I really enjoyed the Food Wife episode where Marge, Bart, and Lisa become food bloggers and Marge worries about being the cool parent. It had a few of the hallmarks of the older seasons, a somewhat grounded plot, no one went to space, and there were no magic jockeys. The guest stars were the focus of the episode, and Homer's jerk-ass tendencies were kept to a minimum. Lindsay's answer, I was still an avid watcher when the Manchin family aired, and I still love it. I love episodes wherein Homer gets to cause so much trouble. I put all these three answers right next to each other because they all came back to back to back. Robert's answer at Barlow 2711. Trilogy of Error. 3 points of view. Very unique. Rest in peace, Linguo. He is being disrespected no more. Steven at Hans Milhouse. Trilogy of Error from season 12. I usually love the unique format episodes and I enjoy the movie. Go. And John at TravelStyle 311. Trilogy of Error. I now fill out every online survey. I am Linguo and I live on 123 Fake Street. Inflammable means flammable. So those three came indirect, all one after another. It was impressive. Yeah, Trilogy of Error. Geeks broadcast at GBN_Geek Network. Brick Like Me is a great story that takes a look again in Homer and Lisa's relationship, but in Lego. It is a sweet story. Josh Horton 32, Brick Like Me. The entire concept is unique and executed brilliantly. Sean at SeanAMac 15. Halloween of Horror from season 27. Outstanding Simpsons episode with humor, character, and story. Easily top 50 of all time. And finally, Danny at WooshDannyH. I have a soft spot for Steal This Episode in season 25. Story bit outdated in 2014, but guest stars really carried the plot. Matt, what is your answer?
Okay. I have to be honest. There are so many episodes that it's really hard to pick one where I'm just like, oh, that one, obviously that one. I got a few though that really stood out in my mind, and so I'm gonna pick one, but know that this is not really my entire answer just because there are so many incredibly good ones. I'm gonna actually go with I believe it's The Dad Who Knew Too Little, which is basically about Homer realizing he knows nothing about Lisa and hiring a private eye to follow her and get information on her. I feel like the episode has a really good arc of Homer using this information to get close to Lisa and then Lisa finding out and then Homer not paying the guy, so they have to work together. So it does work out for Homer and Lisa in the end, even though they not in the way he intended, essentially. It's a really great Homer and Lisa episode. You know, I'm a sucker for Lisa episodes, and in this one, Homer is not too insufferable, but he makes a stupid mistake because it's Homer, and hilarity comes out of it, but it's got that strong emotional core we always worry about. So that's the one I'm going with. I can't say it's my favorite, but it's definitely near the top because there are a few that I can't pick between. So
no offense sitting here, Matt.
No, I mean, I accept that. That's the one I picked. So.
Okay. Good.
That's all you get.
My answer is Homer, H-O-M-R.
Ah, yes.
Which is smack dab in some of the worst seasons, in my opinion. And yet, I don't know, it's a very creative and fun, and, you know, it's a Homer. It hits all kind of a lot of things I love. This Homer and Lisa episode, seeing Homer and Lisa bond in a way that they normally can't. Like, makes you think of this episode a little bit. And, like, Lisa has a family member that she doesn't have to, like, kind of lower herself intellectually to talk to. You know, when normally the reason Lisa and Homer bond is because of, you know, she's still a child, even though she's very intelligent. And Homer is much a child at heart. And then seeing them bond because Homer suddenly gains all this intelligence, even though it is completely ridiculous. I don't know. I still really like it. And like you.
Interesting that we both chose Homer and Lisa episodes.
Yeah, I know. It's so crazy. we've never actually, like, you know, led anyone to believe that's typically our favorite kinds of episodes. I also have others that could probably, if you ask me on other days, I'd probably answer those instead. But today, I say Homer. Our next, I changed the question, Matt. I hit with inspiration for our next week's question.
Okay.
What is your favorite ending to an episode?
Oh, that's going to be a tough one.
You know,
I feel like this episode is going to take a lot of the vote, but
well, it might,
I'm sure we can find some better ones.
Aside from the core content of the episode, you know, like, obviously everyone has their favorite episode and the ending of that weighs in, but what is your favorite ending regardless? Like, the last 30 seconds, whatever. I'm not... You know, you guys.
We're gonna be loose with the rules.
Yeah, we're always loose on the rules for the most part. I like seeing people bend them. So, what is your favorite ending to an episode? I will post this question on all our social media: Facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod. You can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Reach out to us any of those places. Like, follow, subscribe. You know, social media words. Join the discussion. I post links and stuff when I find stuff. Now that we're back in, the current season, there's always stuff popping up. You see, like, the couch gag for episode 600 is going to be VR capable, Matt.
I did not see that, actually.
Yeah, I tried to. They were giving away cardboard Google cardboard glasses, Simpsons themed.
Ooh.
For like the first 25,000 to register, but the site was completely broken when I tried to use it, so I gave up on that. I think it just got hit by everyone all at once.
Yeah.
We can move on, Matt, to our next segment. It is time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I will each challenge each other with three trivia questions. One easy, one medium, one hard. Try and stump the other. We have a wager for this season. Whoever loses has to eat 64 slices of American cheese. Or at least attempt it. I think I can get it done if I had to.
Yeah, probably, but I really don't want to.
I don't think anyone wants to, Matt. I'm just saying that you could, right? You could.
I probably could without dying.
Well, maybe. I think not dying is always the goal. Okay, Matt, start us off. Give me an easy question.
All right, sir. Your easy question for today. Man, these are really easy for you, but well, I'll go with it. What military organization does Homer join in Simpson Tide?
The Navy?
You're close.
It's not the Navy?
It is, but it's a specific subset of the Navy.
What do you mean, a specific subset of the Navy?
I'll give it to you. It's actually the Naval Reserve.
That's the Navy, Matt.
Yeah, but there's only... it's a distinct portion of it.
I know, but that's not... There's the armed forces. There's Army, Marines, Navy, Air Force. There's no... You don't put the... If you want to do National Guard, you throw that in there, or the Coast Guard. But those aren't... You don't say Naval Reserve.
Fair enough.
Your easy question.
Whatever, I guess I can give it to you.
Your easy question, Matt. What is the name of Homer's half-brother?
Herb.
I need a full name.
Herb Powell.
Correct.
Makes a pow-pow powerful car.
That's a good pull. I would not remember that. Give me my medium question.
Okay. In Simpson Tide, when on the submarine they are assigned to, what Star Trek character shows up as one of the crew members?
You're expecting me to have watched Simpson Tide recently, aren't you?
I mean, you can kind of work through it a little bit on which ones will show up and which ones won't, but, you know.
I'm, is it, What's his name? Come on, Matt. You know, that guy.
Uh-huh.
Why can't I think of his name? Is it the Scottish? Scotty. That's him. Scotty shows up.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
I'm sorry. It is Sulu.
Sulu? Okay. I don't know. Why would it be Sulu?
Because he's the helmsman. Homer tells him, take us home, Mr. Sulu. And Sulu says, plotting course for Rigel 7. I mean home.
Oh, I don't remember that whatsoever.
Oh, well. What a bad episode.
No, I'm not saying it's bad. I just haven't seen it in a very, very long time.
All right, hit me.
What is the first name of Marge's father?
Ooh. Oh, Marge's father. Oh, man. What is the first name of Marge's father? For some reason, Clancy is coming to mind, but I don't think that's right. But that's what I'm going to go with because nothing else is coming up.
Is that your final answer?
Indeed it is.
You are correct.
Really?
Yeah.
It is Clancy. My brain knew better than I did.
It is Clancy. Clancy Bouvier.
Weird.
All right, Matt.
All right, Robbie.
Hard question.
You ready to go?
Mm-hmm. I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
All right. This is probably pretty hard since you haven't seen Simpson Died, but name five of the nations that show up to catch Homer at the end of the episode.
I've seen Simpson Died. It was just a really long time ago. Mm-hmm. Five of the nations. Okay. Japan, Britain, Germany, the Netherlands, Iceland. Those are just five countries off the top of my head.
All right. I'm somewhat hilarious. That all of those are wrong.
Oh, good. Excellent.
It is actually U.S., China, the USSR, not Russia, the USSR, because they come back in the episode, Antarctica, crewed by penguins, a Viking ship, and an unidentified Spanish-speaking nation that I believe is supposed to be Spain based on the flag, but I could be wrong. If anyone knows better, please let me know. But those are the six nations that show up on the end.
So you're saying that I got it right?
I'm afraid not, Robbie. Sorry.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, I want to reinforce I've not seen Simpson Tide in probably a decade. Okay.
Wow.
In Lisa the Simpson, which we mentioned earlier in this episode,
mm-hmm.
Lisa finds out that only the female Simpsons are exempt from the quote-unquote Simpson gene that makes them colossally stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Homer, in his best efforts, rounds up all the Simpsons he could find to try and disprove Lisa's assertion about the Simpson gene.
Okay.
We meet seven different male Simpsons who list their occupations. Four of those seven occupations that they list.
Okay, let's see. We'll go with the easy ones. There's the jug band manager. There's the guy who plays a millionaire at parties. There's the person who steps in front of cars and sues the drivers. I can't get the fourth one. Oh, man, this is going to suck if I can't get the last one. This is just the male Simpsons, right?
Correct.
Dang, because I know all three of the females. I am going to say Rodeo Clown as my last one, because I can't think of any of the other ones.
Sorry, Matt. That is incorrect.
Aww.
You got those three right. The other four runs an unsuccessful shrimp company.
Oh, of course.
Shoots birds at the airport.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. I beg celebrities for money.
Ah.
And yes. Prison snitch. There's also
right before jug band manager.
It does, and there's also a person. One of the male Simpsons just says, "My legs hurt," but that's not really an occupation.
I suppose I'll survive.
We're so close.
Mm-hmm.
You got a lead on me now. You're up 2 points.
That's true.
I mean, it might as well just call it quits now. I'm just gonna get my cheese eaten ready. Just get that cheese.
I would just like to point out that my favorite of the females is the Doctor of Complicated Surgery.
That sounds like something that they would that would be able. Complicated surgery is you need smart people on complicated surgery. It's important.
Indeed, especially that's a very narrow specialty. What qualifies as complicated surgery?
Anything that involves more than one organ.
Well then, all right.
That's complicated.
Now we know
it's complicated. I was going to say body system, but I think all surgery involves more than one body system. So, okay, these are from John. I got a couple extras. These are all from more from You Only Move Twice.
Ooh, okay.
When Hank takes a phone call during a trust exercise and Homer falls over, what is the problem upstairs?
Someone has eaten part of his lunch.
That is correct. What are the names of Bart's classmates in the Leg Up program?
The names? Oh,
yeah.
Gordy is one.
Those are good names.
Yeah. Dot, I believe.
Keep going. You got three more.
Those are the only ones I can remember.
Okay. There's Warren, Melvin, Gary, Dot, and Gordy.
Gary.
Those are all good. I like those names. Finally, here we go. What type of chipmunk does Lisa encounter in the woods?
A northern reticulated chipmunk.
That is correct.
He's so reticulated.
And then blows the plant like right in her face and gets Lisa all allergic. There's more. I will save them for later. If you have any particular questions you'd like me to ask Grill Matt with or a theme for us to use, just send it in to the aforementioned social media places. We can move on, Matthew, to our final segment. A segment we end every single episode with. It's time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show where Matt and I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Where you got this one, Matt?
It's pretty up there, I gotta say. I'm thinking top 20 for sure. I'm even thinking maybe top 10. What do you think?
I may upset some people when I say this.
Uh-oh.
But I don't... This episode is not as good as I remember it.
Really? Interesting.
I think my only criticism is that it's a little messy at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird how they get there.
And, I don't know, it's not as necessarily funny. It's not like a super funny, hilarious. You know, it's very touching. I'm not discounting the emotional core of this episode, which is still very strong. The ending is still one of the strongest in the entire show. You know, Glenn Close performs her role very well. And Homer and Dan Castanella as well. Like he is the other side of that equation, and he also does a very good job.
That's true. A lot of episodes you don't really get the full range of emotions from Homer, and I feel like this is one where you really do. Like Homer has so many highs and lows in this episode that Dan Castellaneta does a great job of making them feel different. Like when Homer is super excited, you can tell. When Homer is downtrodden or scared, you can really tell.
My sticking point is, and Maggie makes three.
Because
I think I like and Maggie makes three more. I think I feel like it's better.
The more I think about it, the more I realize you're right. Like, this episode has a few good jokes in it, which we got with most of our clips, actually. But I feel like And Maggie Makes Three does make a better balance between heartfeltness and jokes. Because I feel like most of the jokes here are kind of just one-offs that are a little funny, but aren't kind of core to the episode.
Well, it's just this episode is doing a lot. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, there's just so much happening in it where you have to reintroduce a character we've never seen before, establish what she's been doing for this entire time, establish this emotional connection with her and the rest of the family members. Like, she doesn't even spend...
And why she left.
Yeah, and she doesn't spend... We don't even see any time... She, like, doesn't spend any time with Marge. Like, that does not happen.
Or Bart, really, for that matter.
I mean, yeah, we see him hanging out with her while she's hanging out with Lisa when they're tie-dyeing shirts and stuff. But there's no, you know, there's not a... And also the hunt for her with Mr. Burns and the Dragnet guys. And, like, there's a lot happening in this episode. And they try and fit in as much as they can. But because they have to have her return and have her go before the end of the episode, they have to get... It has to move. It has to really fast. And I think it's to its detriment a little bit.
That's true. It does feel kind of rushed. I mean, there's not even a chalkboard gag in this episode. Well, I mean, it still feels like something that's happening every second of the episode.
And I mean, they do kind of, by using that credit sequence as, you know, that very, very kind of melancholy ending, they kind of utilize all the time they possibly can, but it felt a little rushed. I don't know. It's still very impactful and still very touching. Because I know anyone who, you know, most of us, we all have mothers, you know, and like it's such a late, like that losing, like Homer's story in this is like extremely sympathetic. I don't know. I, I, I go back and forth, like, on where, like, this is a tough one, because should we really penalize it for doing so much? And, like, or is it, like, did it try and do too much? I think it did
the amount it did, but at the expense of humor a little bit. So maybe we can hold it against it a little bit, but I really want to rank it high because it is so incredibly emotional. And it's pulled off so well, and Glenn Close is amazing, but you're right. If this was an episode of any other sitcom, it would be one of the best ones of all time. But as a Simpson episode, it does lack a little something that I feel like The Simpsons needs to be a good Simpsons episode.
I would put it... I don't like our kind of... Sometimes we end up just saying, oh, this episode's like this one, but it's not quite as good, so we just put it right below it. I don't necessarily like doing that all the time. But I don't know. And Maggie Makes Three just... It makes me laugh more, and it also has that really powerful ending. You know, do it for her. It's a... You know.
Mm-hmm.
Because right above in Maggie Makes Three is Lemon of Troy, then Lisa the Vegetarian, Bart's Comet, I Married Marge, The Black Widower, Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 1. Like, I don't think it's top five for sure. You could, I don't know, maybe it is better. I'm waffling. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if it is, it's not by much. I feel like Bart's Comet is definitely better, I would say, and so is I Married Marge. So if we're going to put it up there, I think we could keep it underneath number 9, Lisa the Vegetarian, Lemon of Troy. I really like Lemon of Troy, and I feel like it is a good overall episode. It doesn't obviously have the heart that something like this does, but it's a lot funnier. Getting around to And Maggie Makes Three, I feel like this episode basically concentrates very heavily on Mona, and it's kind of all about Mona, whereas And Maggie Makes Three is more about the core family members, and I think it really relies on, what do you think is more important? Do you think a story about the core family is more important, or do you like bringing in extra characters and having seen the family react to them and having the episode mostly involve them? I don't know. It's so hard to put this anywhere.
Is it better than Last Exit of Springfield? You like that episode more than you like that more than I do.
I do. I like it a lot. But I'm going to say this is probably better than Last Exit of Springfield.
Well, then I think we got its place then. I think it's right below Maggie Makes Three and right above Last Exit of Springfield.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. That'd be number 13 for those keeping track at home, which is still pretty high on this list. And this list is crazy. I think someone in one of our recent listener questions, and I think it was the most overrated argument. They're like, yeah, this episode's a solid 9 out of 10, but and in most shows that would be great. But, you know, with The Simpsons, when there's 50 episodes that are 10s, you know, what do you do? And I think that's kind of we're splitting hairs at a certain point, but you know, we have to do it. It's our duty. We have to do our duty. Judge Judy and Executioner.
I wondered if you're gonna go there.
Of course I am, Matt. Why would I not? Our number one episode is still Cape Fear. Our last place is 128, Homer's Odyssey. We'll be supplanted. There will be a worse episode, I promise. We'll get there.
Someday. I've been going back and watching everything from like season 12 on, and there are definitely some candidates in there.
Mm-hmm. There are. You're right. What's our next episode, Matt?
Let's check the old listy list. Let's see. Next episode is going to be Sideshow Bob's Last Gleaming. Oh, Sideshow Bob episode.
We get some Bob, some Kelsey Grammer. I haven't watched this episode in a while, so I'd be interested to see how I feel about it. You can find this list, the best episode ever list, at our website, simplythesimpsonsshow.com. Also, there are links to new episodes, downloadable, streaming, links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed, and also a link to our Patreon if you think the show's worth a buck or two. We'd really appreciate if you threw it our way. We remain ad-free because of it. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter, at MixMasterSerial. That's MixMasterSerial. Please check out my other podcasts, my comic book podcast, Handsome Boys Comics Hour, and my everything podcast called The Serial Fanaticist. That's Fanatic IST. Matt does not participate in social media unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer. You will not find him.
That's true. However, I have working on a solution to use hurricanes as a way of signaling. So if you like, just go to your nearest hurricane, throw a message up in the air, and in my secret flying fortress at the center, I will attempt to retrieve your communiques.
You have a secret hurricane fortress, Matt?
No, that's not at all how I survived this hurricane. It's not where I'm broadcasting from at all.
Good. It's good to know. With that, I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching Misfits.
Shh.